Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Looking for a high of 52 today under partly sunny skies. Great time to get to your locally owned garden center or
nursery. All of them, all of the above.
All of the above.
A lot of things going on, Ernie, trust me.
And we were talking a little bit about fertilizer before we went into the break.
Yeah, we're talking about fertilizers because it's been a hot button with me, and I know a lot of our customers, when they come into the garden center, they see an array of fertilizers on a shelf, and what does that really mean to you as a homeowner or an avid gardener or a novice gardener? And it can become confusing in a lot of ways. And the real question that I'm posing today, or throwing this out there, is do you need a certain individual fertilizer for every variety or different plant that you grow in the landscape or inside the house or in containers or what have you? And the answer is no.
You don't need designer fertilizers.
No. Well, you know, you do to a degree. You know, that's what we're...
For each plant.
That's why we're talking about this, because it gets confusing, and I really want to try and explain this in layman's terms. I'm trying to make this as simplified as I possibly can, and I'm not an expert at various chemical compounds and so forth. And we're going to talk about synthetic fertilizers, inorganic fertilizers, and organic fertilizers. What does that mean? And what do you really want to look for? I personally, I use a couple of different varieties of fertilizers based on what it is that I'm feeding and what's going on with that particular plant. That's when, you know, you might need to change some things up. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about the lawns and so forth and what those numbers mean and on that size bag for the lawn. But when it comes to vegetables, I see this all the time. I see these extraordinary high numbers of nitrogen for vegetable plants, and I'm a dumb this down. We're all familiar with 10, 10, 10.
Yes.
Are we not? 10, 10, 10 has been around for 10, 10, 10 thousands of years. No, I'm just facetiously saying that. But 10, 10, 10 is what farmers have used for a number of years, and it's for this reason only. It's an adequate amount of fertilizer based on, you know, what they're using it for. We don't want high nitrogen types of fertilizers on our vegetable plants, because what ultimately ends up happening is we get this beautiful plant. It's lush green, but it lacks fruit production.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or it's not producing. So I hear this all the time. Some of the older gentlemen that come in who have been growing tomato plants for years, every year they change it up, or they're trying to beat their buddy down the street, or there's a contest on the block who has the first tomato.
Right. Yeah, we're about to get into that bragging season.
Yeah, we're not far away from it. And I'll hear these guys say, oh, you know, my tomato plants, they were almost up to my second story roof line. Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, you need to string it up. You need to stake it up. There's no doubt about it. But how much fruit do you get? You know, or I'll hear it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my plants are beautiful, but I don't know what's going on.
They're not
setting fruit. Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of times that has to do with high amounts of nitrogen. So you want to be at 10, you know, a 10% based upon the weight of the container or the weight of the bag. So we don't want high nitrogen fertilizers on our vegetable plants. You know, you want your numbers to be closer together, like a 5-6-6 or a 10-10-10 or an 8-6-8. You know, you want the numbers to be closer together.
Slow and steady when it comes to vegetable production.
It's like cooking. Slow and steady, like bacon. You don't turn it up real high right off the bat.
No.
Stuff be popping on you. So keep that in mind when it's vegetables. Now, the next thing you really have to ask yourself when you're growing edibles, vegetables, and fruits and so forth, are you the individual that you're okay with using synthetic fertilizers, meaning they're inorganic, they're man-made, or are you going to go the organic route? Either way, the fertilizer is going to be beneficial for you. You need to fertilize, and you need to determine what approach it is that you're going to take. There are people who are strictly organic. I'm organic when I grow edibles, and that's just how it's going to be for me. I do my best. I know that we get enough of other things from other products that are imported into the country from foreign countries that we really don't know what's being sprayed on those items. We don't know what they're being fed.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the fruit looks beautiful, or the vegetable looks beautiful. You know, what I find amazing is how can, you know, we're putting things on our vegetables that are arriving at the grocery stores for longevity to keep them in good shape. You know, when you see that waxy, good looking bell pepper,
right,
versus one that's grown organically, they don't look like one another. When you have one that's grown organically versus one it's been, you know, treated and all that other good stuff for longevity. Think about it. They're coming all the way from California, or they're coming all the way up from out of Mexico.
Yeah.
There's a lot of travel time there.
You know, that's interesting you say that. Of course, baby Fiona celebrated her 1 year birthday on Wednesday, and Jason Stat from the Big Dave and Friends show with Chelsea and Stat went over to help celebrate. He dressed himself as a clown and then took over, stopped at the grocery store, grabbed some lettuce and stuff, was going to give them, you know, to the baby hippo, and they didn't do that because of what may be on there. And
absolutely.
It struck me as interesting when you just said that. I thought, you know what, that's a perfect point, is if they won't give it to the hippo, maybe we ought to be concerned about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you're looking for fertilizers, and that was a great point there, and I like that you brought that up. If you really want something, you know, the term natural and organic can mean a number of things. And the government, you know, the regulators are starting to crack down on those approaches. Just because you say something's natural does not mean anything.
Right.
And it's being policed. They're watching it closely. They're making companies take the necessary approaches to label things as they should be labeled. And that's really a benefit to us. And we look at that in a lot of ways. And we say this often, gosh, there's more regulations. There's some things that need to be regulated where we need to take the temperature and just see how things are performing. And there's some things, just leave it alone. But if you truly want something that's organic, it will have the OMRI certification, O-M-R-I. That is the Organic Material Review Institute that will test these products and say that these products are exactly what they are labeled as being, and that they are truly free of pesticides, fungicides, etc., all that good stuff. So look for OMRI certification if that really comes into play, and if, in fact, that's important to you when you're growing edibles, especially, you know, with the kids around.
Sure.
And if you're gardening with kids, to me, that's important. Now, is the green box or, you know, the other stuff bad? No, it works. But our plants do need some sort of fertilization in order for us to be successful. Now, that's just all there is to it. So I'm going to use a different type of fertilizer, as I was just saying a few moments ago, when I'm growing vegetables than I am if I'm growing plants and other various things or annuals in a window box, or if I'm growing those in a container. So that's when I am buying different types of fertilizer. There's oftentimes, Ernie, when people come into the garden center and say, hey, I want a fertilizer that is a 9-17-6. Well, okay. Well, let's try and get you a 10-10-10. That's still going to be close. There's a difference in the middle number, but maybe we can come back and, you know, kind of amend it with something else that gives us phosphorus.
Right.
Keep that thought in mind, because I'm really rambling on, and if I am, I apologize. But I just really want to touch more on fertilizers and what they're really all about. Give us a shout here at 749-B105. Ernie and Tony, your local home and gardening guys, we'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I had to chuckle just a little bit. I got a text from my wife asking this very same question. Tony, we have Joe on the line who wants to know about fertilizers from cows. Hi, Joe. Thanks for hanging on.
I'm here.
So ask Tony your question.
I listening to your all about your fertilizer and everything. Now, I was just curious about cow manure. Doesn't it do the same thing?
Cow manure is a great fertilizer, and let's take it a couple steps further. It's not organic if the cattle are eating in areas or pastures that have been sprayed with other types of chemicals, right? So it could be organic, and it may not be organic. That's one thing we need to consider about cow manure. But when cow manure has aged, it's a great fertilizer. It's very it's a wonderful growing medium, especially when it's turned into like other soil type situations, like into the ground. You turn it into the ground, or add a little bit to a hotbed, or add a little bit to your gardening beds.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure that it's aged, that it has, you know, dried and cured where it's not extremely hot, where it could potentially burn plants. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
So, but it is an excellent nutrient-rich fertilizer. There's no doubt about it. We know that. That's a fact. And the analysis can vary based upon who's manufacturing it and what they're doing with it. But it's very low in nitrogen and other elements, so it is a huge benefit. It really is. So
okay.
That's a great question.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, it was kind of interesting, and that's an excellent point, that if the cow is ingesting those chemicals, it's going to pass through the system.
So we automatically think because it's cow manure that it's always organic.
Right.
It could be, and it may not be, but that's really not important. There is a value, you know, there is value to cow manure, just like there are like chicken manure and other various things. So that was a great question. What's most important when you're working with cow manure is to let it age properly to where you can go ahead and use it without potentially burning a plant by giving it too much nitrogen. That's what they used to do with hotbeds. You know, I was just talking to somebody the other day. It was Teresa Willenborg, and she was telling me about when she was younger and out there on the farm, they would throw manure in those hotbeds and let it all heat up and break down and then plant
sure.
in it,
yeah.
and they would have wonderful crops. So there's a huge element and value to definitely using manures. One in particular, we at our garden center, we sell a combination of cow manure with compost. And it's a wonderful product. It's a great soil amendment. So you're getting those elements of nutrients with that. So a great question, and I hope that helped Lisa as well.
Sure. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I have to pause for a moment, but when we come back,
we'll still talk fertilizer.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking a little bit about the foundation. The importance of success is starting with a good recipe, right? And
that's
if you
right.
don't start with soil, if you want to do something in your landscape or in your yard, you're making a big mistake.
I like that. Soil recipes.
The soil recipe.
It's really what it boils down to. You want a good meal, you got to have a good recipe. You want a good plant, a healthy plant, a happy plant, you have to have a good soil recipe. And a lot of the soils that you see today that when you're in a garden center and you're purchasing 4-inch plants, even some of the flats, the cell packs, the gallon material and so forth, a lot of times, most of that plant material, I'm not going to say all, but for the most part, 95 to 98% of that plant, those plants have been grown in what we call a soilless mix.
Hmm.
Okay, and that potting mix could be a number of things for the most part, but just in general, you know, that potting mix is comprised of Canadian sphagnum peat, either perlite or vermiculite, and sometimes maybe a little fertilizer, maybe just a little bit of bark or a wetting agent to make it easier to absorb water, because Canadian peat can be a little on the dry side, so getting it to absorb and accept moisture is of the utmost importance. And as growers, that's what growers are buying when they buy good soil mixes, especially the soilless mixes. And the beauty of the soilless mixes is really this. They're formulated for various growing situations and conditions that most plants like to be in. And it just makes things a lot simpler for growers. Also, it's lighter in weight. It's easier to carry around a couple of trays and move those trays. Without them being too heavy. But for the most part, the soilless mixes are comprised, again, of peat moss, perlite, and sometimes, like I said, a little fertilizer, and we'll get to that part in just a moment. But the soilless mixers with the perlite or the vermiculite in them really allow for better root development and root penetration, and also provide for, you know, good drainage when we're watering these plants in a growing situation. And a lot of our plants are used to growing in these types of mediums. And think about this. When we take these plants home and we put them into the ground and it's all clay, they're not accustomed to that. That's why we need to make our soil better and amend them with other products. If you take these products home and you put them in a container that's got $2 worth of dirt in it, they're not used to growing in that type of a situation or environment.
You're not going to have much success there.
Right. So what it is, we're trying to encourage you to use these products that make it easier for us and those who are growers. When you get those home, it's a transparent kind of transition. You know, it's used to that. It's accustomed to that.
Mm-hmm.
So look for the soilless mixes at your garden centers. And we're going to talk about these other types of products too as we progress on.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Doug on the line. He's got a couple of questions about a few plants. Hi, Doug. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, quick number one question. Can you post or list where the extension offices are to get soil samples?
Yes, I can do that, and I will do that for you. Are you in northern Kentucky, or are you in Hamilton County?
Yeah, this is Jeff's dad, Doug.
Oh, okay. Doug, over in Kenton County, out there at the corner of Taylor Mill Road and Marshall Road, is the Kenton County Extension. And their phone number actually is 356-3155. And over in Boone County, they just built a new facility, too. It's a wonderful facility. The Boone County Extension is right there, the corner of 18 and Camp Ernst Road.
Okay.
And we have a great extension, too, over in Campbell County. Sarah Stoltz does a great job over there, right there off of 27, just past NKU on the right.
Gotcha.
But
another question.
Yeah.
The native flower bergamot and columbine, are they the base root that where all these hybrids that you guys sell came from?
That could very well be bergamot. That's kind of like a Monarda. And it's actually an herb too. And I've had people ask for bergamot, but also Monarda, bee balm, that's a bergamot. So yeah, a lot of those are derivatives of and have been hybridized down the road, so to speak.
Okay. Because I found it on my farm down in Augusta, down on my property.
Oh.
Beautiful flower, but it's the same stuff that I think I've seen in your store before, or similar to it.
Yeah, a lot of them are very similar, exactly. But,
right.
Yeah, are you still growing the old sunflower still? Did you give up on that?
I'm actually on my way down to the Deer and Turkey Show in Louisville today.
Yeah.
There's a guy talking about food plots down there and soil samples, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
I've been overran by foxtail, and I can't grow anything.
Yeah, foxtail, that's a nuisance. It's a tough one to get rid of. Well, I tell you what, stop by sometime. It's always good to hear from you, and please give Jeff my best. I haven't seen Jeff in a long time.
He's doing great. I appreciate it.
Tell him I said hello. Okay, Doug. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're still going to stay in the ground.
We're in the ground, in the soil. We're getting doity. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Doug sort of surprised me when he mentioned the columbine. That's one of our favorite plants here at the house.
Yeah, it's a native.
And I didn't know it was a native plant.
Yeah, it's one of those that you'll see blooming early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, too, as it gets hot throughout the summer and dry, they'll start to wane off. And it might even just disappear. But don't let that fool you, because it more than likely come back the next year. It's a plant that early in the year, I mean, it likes a little bit of shade. So if it's in a mm-hmm. shade garden, you know, you don't see it disappearing as quickly or as early as you would if it wasn't in a shade garden or dry.
Right.
And a lot of times when it's really in its heyday or in its bloom period, when it's showing off, a lot of the trees have yet to leaf out. So it's right there early in the season. A lot of various types of columbine. I really love it. Aquilegia is another name for it.
Yeah.
Beautiful colors. I know sometimes you have to be really careful. Well, especially in the greenhouse environment, they can get, they have an issue or a tendency to get powdery mildew. But nonetheless, and sometimes it comes along with it. We're buying that too, but it's a wonderful plant and beautiful when it blooms. It's very unique, but that's interesting. You know, the other thing you talked about too was bergamot. That's, you know, like I said, I know it's in relation to a perennial that we talk about occasionally called bee balm, Monarda. But there's still some differences there, and it's an herb, and I don't know all that. You get into the botanical elements of things, it gets a little twisted and convoluted, but they're related.
Right.
So, yeah, Doug likes to garden. He's got a farm south of here. Likes to hunt, too.
Yeah.
But his son, as a youngster, used to work with us at the garden center. And Jeff is over the top. And he's teaching college-level classes. He's got his doctorate. Smart kid. And it's neat to see somebody like that progress on and develop and become a young adult. And he does really, really well. He loves reptiles. He would always go and study what rattlesnakes and various things. And I would joke with him, I would tell Jeff, I'm going to get an insurance policy out on him. I don't want to handle rattlesnakes. I'm sorry. But anyway, that's why I had told Jeff or had told Doug to give Jeff my best. Great kid. Anyway, we've been talking about soils and we're going to keep it there for a little bit. And, you know, we're talking about container gardening, which is one of the biggest trends. And we were talking about that last week. It's still a trend. It's been around for a while. And it isn't going anywhere by any means anytime. It's here with us. And one of the soil mixtures that I like to use a lot in containers, and at the same time when I do this, I really make for good drainage. I like to use broken clay pots in the bottom of my containers or large stone, things that do not get clogged up down at the bottom, which will always allow for good drainage. I can't say this enough, but I have found I like to use Fertilume's soil, the ultimate potting mix by Fertilume, and I like to use another topsoil, as simple as it is, by, excuse me, Michigan Pete, called Garden Magic Topsoil. Now, it's a pretty decent topsoil. It has a little bit of sand in it, but when you marry it with the Fertilume Ultimate Potting Soil at a 50-50 ratio, I have found that to be an excellent mixture for containers. Now, there are other mixtures and other soils out there that do well in containers. There's no doubt about it. But for me, this is one that I have been with and stayed with for the last 10 years or so. At this topsoil, you know, it's a dark color topsoil. It keeps the sphagnum peat in check. The sphagnum peat keeps that topsoil in check. So one balances the other, so you don't get that drying out effect, nor do you get that I'm staying too wet too long effect. So when you marry Fertilume and Michigan Pete's Garden Magic Topsoil 50-50, you'll love that mixture for your containers. And if you use that mixture, I want you to come back and tell me what you thought about it.
Tony, we have Kathy on the line from Hamilton who may be asking you about that. She's got a question about transplanting a couple of plants. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi. How are you this morning?
Wonderful.
Well.
Wonderful. Good morning.
So, well, I have some daylilies that have been transplanted, and this year they did not do very good at all.
Okay.
My Asian lilies did fine, but my daylilies, they didn't even hardly come up or even bloom. So I don't know if it's maybe because they're too old or if it was a difference in, you know, more of the soil mixture.
Are they in that? Are they in the ground?
Yes.
Okay. Full sun?
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, we got that element. So I'm assuming that you've divided these, right? Because you should divide daylilies about every 3 years for them, keep them vigorous, and they'll be a better performing perennial plant for you. My question is, you know, when you divided it, did you divide them in such a way you had enough, you know, you had ample amount of, like, eyes or a decent crown?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Did you do any type of fertilization when you did all this?
Yes, I did.
And did you do it right when you made the transplant or when you divided those with something high in nitrogen? Could you have burned them?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. A lot of times, you think about it, when you divide a plant, you're stressing it out. And a lot, and I'm not saying this is what may have happened. But if you did this last year, let's wait another year and see what we get this year, what kind of results we see. But what also happens, refrain from using fertilizers when we're dividing, okay? Because now we have a plant that's stressed because we've ripped it out of the ground, we've torn it apart, so it's not the ideal situation to be in. And when we put it back into the ground, the best thing that you can do is use a root stimulator. Okay. Those are genetically engineered to provide the necessary hormones for root development. That's what we want. Or use something very low in nitrogen so we don't risk burning a plant. Okay?
Okay.
And then the other element is, you know, use something perhaps that has mycorrhiza in it, which is a beneficial bacteria that aids with root development. Now, here's something else that could have happened, too. You know, did you plant it too deep? You know, that ground.
I don't think so. I planted it about maybe where the crown, and the showing, you know, a little.
Got it.
Maybe I didn't plant it deep enough, maybe?
Well, then what would come into play if it was exposed and it dried out? You know, again, it's hard to say. And then sometimes, you know, when you do that, for whatever reason, you know, it didn't like the location. Maybe it was the soil. Maybe it was too heavy in clay. I'm not really sure. But daylilies are not that particular. And, you know, also daylilies, some have had issues with diseases like rust. You know, it's really, really hard to say. But
yeah, these daylilies have been transplanted from Northern Ohio to Florida, back to Ohio, now to a different place in Ohio.
Right, right. And you did all this last year, correct?
No. It's been over years.
And you're still not seeing any...
Well, I did 2 years ago, but when we moved them to our new place, last year all I got was green. I didn't get no stems coming up with flowers or anything. All I got was just green.
Last year. But you had a nice clump, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, this would be one of those situations, as I was talking about fertilizers earlier. Don't gun it and don't goose it and more is not better. But you might want to try something just a little higher in phosphorus, that middle number. Because if you've divided them, you know, and that's one of those key important elements about daylilies, you know, to keep them vigorous and blooming and so forth. That's important. Are these like the daylilies, like Stella de Oris, or were there repeat bloomers? Or are these like some of those that are specialties that will bloom a time or two, and that's pretty much it?
No, these ones always came up every year, and they would come up several different times.
Up several different times or bloom several different times?
Bloom several different times.
Okay, so they sound like repeat bloomers. Okay. Other than that, you know, it sounds like to me you planted them at the right depth. You know, the crown was where it needed to be. You know, again, a lot of times stay away from those high nitrogen fertilizers after transplanting, after division. That's not where you want to be. You don't want to risk burning anything or stunting anything. And, you know, if you had a nice green clump last year, a healthy clump, then what I would do, I would just give it a little bit more of a type of fertilizer that has, you know, get something with triple phosphate and just sprinkle a little bit around the soil surface this year and see if you notice anything different. What garden center are you close to?
She's in Hamilton, so.
Right. I'm on the west side of Hamilton.
You can go over to Schwab's. You can go over to White Oak. If you can go a little north up to Lakeview. Just see one of those guys.
Yeah, I know where Lakeview's at.
Yeah, see Jim Montag and just tell him you want something with a little higher middle number, low phosphorus. And don't do anything else heroic and follow up with this and see what happens this year.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it.
Tell Jim we said hello.
Yeah,
I will.
Do you walk in or you tell him you want to meet Jim?
Okay,
I will.
All
right, thanks, Kathy.
All right.
749. Thank you. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Paul on the line who's got a question for you about engineering his own soil, I guess. Is that correct, Paul?
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead. Tony's here.
Basically, I'm a build-your-own kind of guy, and over the years, I've built my own topsoils with manures, aged manures, and peat moss and compost.
Got it.
And pretty good success. And there's a little bit of weed control there because when you get your manure, you got seeds in there. And
right.
you need to take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, when you get manure, how do you get what's the best way to get the seeds germinated out of there so you don't have that problem? And how do the greenhouses do it? What do they do to get all the mixture that they use?
Well, most of the mixtures that we buy into the greenhouses, those of us who are growers, has been aged for some time from the manufacturers in such a way, if they are containing elements of manures, sometimes they'll heat them up, they'll sterilize those kind of products. For example, you take Posey Power. It's a soil amendment, but Posey Power is sterilized horse manure. So it's been heated up to kill that weed seed. You know, Timothy is one of those that, you know, horses love Timothy, and goes in the front and comes out the back and is germinating in the yard. So those are sterilized and heated up to a point where the seed is not viable any longer. And that's what you're doing, too, when you compost. You're wanting that compost heap to heat up in such a way it's sterilizing it. It's killing weed seed. It's killing other things. But yet we have the beneficial bacteria there that are remaining and stay in it. Some people with manures, you need to let them age for a while. You could spread manure out and cover it with black plastic and let it heat up. That would probably kill a lot of the weed seed. You could put it in a cold frame, you know, and just let it heat up in the spring and age in there. And as it heats up, you know, they used to call those hotbeds. They would heat that up and it would kill that weed seed. So that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to do it with temperature. You know, because weed seed could stay viable for a long time, but it needs to heat up to a temperature that does away with that viability.
Yeah, and another thing I do is just let it all germinate and then till it in after the seed's already spent.
Sure, you can do that and have some success. Also, you know, are you using these products like in a vegetable garden?
Yes.
Okay, you could do a couple other things. You know, sometimes, you know, weed seeds, it's coming. Like it or not, it's coming. There are people who will use corn gluten as a pre-emergent for weed seed in a vegetable bed, which is, it's safe to use. You don't have to worry about any harsh chemicals or anything like that. But with corn gluten, you have to do it more often, more periodically, or periodic, you know, applications. So the other thing, too, if your beds are manageable, they're not large, I've had great success with newspaper and straw. So those are some measures that you can take to keep weed seed down in the vegetable gardens and the vegetable beds. And that's the only way I would do it, or pull it or turn it under like you're doing. In the landscape with my perennials, my trees, my shrubs and so forth, I'm going to use a product called Dimension. Are you in a neighborhood or a development, or are you in a rural area? Do you get a lot of weed?
I got a mix because I got a home and I got a kind of a farm area, so I kind of got a mix.
Right. What have you found to work best? You just turning it in?
That works really well. Yeah. And the other thing you talked about, newspaper. If you've got some old like plastic mats or whatever, put that down. Even tin. Put tin down.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There are people that will take like 2x6s or 2x8s and put them in between rows. And a lot of times that's where they'll go to remove insects. The insects will go underneath those 2x4s or 2x8s for like protection. And then some of those people who would garden that way, they would just physically hand pick and remove those insects that were underneath. And they would kind of, you know, keep their garden in good shape by that approach.
Yeah. And you don't have to pull the weeds. You let them grow in between. And then the next time you come, you just move the piece. And then so that works. One more question.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite manure, horse or cow?
You know, I've had great success with horse, and I can't tell you why. And I can't tell you that I've not had good success with cow, because I've used the Posey Power often in my garden beds years ago. I would just, you know, every year I'd add some other soil amendments to it, and it has just over time made for wonderful beds. So I have to lean in that direction because that's what I've used the most. I can't tell you which is better. I know that I see a lot of people gravitating towards chicken manure. And a lot of that, you know, a lot of these products have various analysis when it comes to nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So, you know, the manufacturer, depending upon how they do it and how things are aged, those numbers always vary. But you're not going to go wrong with those products at all. And, you know, if you like using various things for your own soil recipes, there is one from Natural Guard, which is a Fertilume company. It's OMRI certified. You know, we've talked about the importance of OMRI, which is the Organic Material Review Institute that certifies it's free of pesticides, herbicides, all that other good stuff. But it has Canadian black peat moss with humates and worm castings and kelp. It's a wonderful soil amendment, and especially if you're doing raised beds. I've taken that along with Posey Power, you name it, peat moss, various things, and I've had wonderful raised beds.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Hey, thanks.
All right. Hope that helps you.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Joe. 749, or Paul, 749 B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment, but there were a couple of really unique calls there.
Yeah, really, soil is so important. And I think what Paul's doing and those questions are wonderful. Everybody has a different approach. There's not one wrong or right approach. There's variations of approaches. And I say this all the time. If you want to go from Cincinnati to Florida, you can drive, you can go by airplane, you can go by train.
Right.
Or you can ride a bike, or you can walk it if you want. You'll still get there eventually.
Right.
So it's just building upon, you know, various things as we design our garden beds. And you know what? We're going to do what Jim Montag always says.
What?
Do something dirty.
We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back.